Mayo Clinic has released a study showing that a popular anti-aging supplement known as DHEA actually has no clear anti-aging benefits. NASA has launched a pair of satellites on a two-year mission to take the first ever 3D images of solar storms. Scientists are hoping the information will help them predict solar storms in the same way they now can predict terrestrial weather. Housing prices for new homes fell 9.6% last month to $217,000. That's the median average. It's the biggest one-month decline in 35 years. Oil industry giant ExxonMobil is reporting third-quarter profits of $10.5 billion. That's the second-largest quarterly profit ever recorded by a publicly traded U.S. company, the largest quarterly profit also recorded by Exxon. Sprint Nextel reports it earned $10.5 billion this past quarter, but because of merger costs in acquiring Nextel a year ago, its net profits fell to $247 million. And the New York Times is reporting that Clear Channel Communications is talking with a consortium of investors about taking the company private. Price tag $18.5 billion. Clear Channel owns more than 1,200 radio and 30 TV stations in this country. Gold is up more than $8 an ounce at this hour, trading at $599.50. Silver is at $12.26. And light sweet crude oil down 36 cents a barrel, trading at $61.04. On Wall Street, all the markets are up. The Dow is up 6 points at 12,144. NASDAQ is up 8, and the S&P 500 is up 3. More at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Diana Walter.
And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. By now, you know, of course, the election is just around the corner. It's amazing, really, that in 9 days, you can help change the course of your government. It doesn't happen often, but you do have a voice in 9 days. And, of course, for the last, I don't know how many months, I've been talking primarily, more than primarily, overwhelmingly about the Democratic and Republican parties. And there's a reason for that. We are a two-party system. In fact, if you take the independents in Congress and you look at them, people like Bernie Sanders or Joe Lieberman or Jim Jeffords, all of them are independents, but they caucus with the Democrats. Now, they're very different. There's huge light between Bernie Sanders, socialist, and Joe Lieberman, who is a Republican-leaning Democrat. But the point is that third parties don't have a large role in this country, and they really haven't since, the Bull Moose Party of Theodore Roosevelt, 1912. And yet the Green and the Libertarian parties are the two other parties in America. The Reform Party is about dead, folks. You may remember them. They were with Ross Perot. I think they're pretty much on their last legs. But the Libertarian Party, like the Green Party, has a consistent philosophy. It's been around a long period of time. And lots of folks call themselves libertarians, but then affiliate with one party or the other. One of the most famous is a congressman you may not have heard of, but I certainly know him from my work in Congress. His name is Ron Paul. He is out of Texas, and although he calls himself a Republican, he is first and foremost a libertarian. So who are the libertarians? What do they believe, and do they have any chance of winning any races this fall or of playing a spoiler role in other races? And what is the role, if at all, of third parties in a system like ours that is so dominated by a two-party system? To answer those questions, I've invited the communications director for the National Libertarian Party, Stephen Gordon. Stephen Gordon, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Good morning. How's everyone doing today?
Everyone's good, actually. Well, I guess we're in the afternoon, although you may still be in the morning. I forget what time zone you're in. Tell me this, Stephen. The Libertarian Party, you have a very distinct philosophy. Share it with our listeners.
It's generally, we want government out of your lives. We want government out of your bedroom. We don't want government spying on your telephone calls. We don't want government investigating your bank accounts. We're the live and let live party. And that's our general philosophy in a nutshell.
One of the things I find interesting is sort of where the parties divide on this government interference in your lives. it sounds like you have a very pure philosophy. The Democrats, I would argue, and you correct me if you disagree with me, would agree with the libertarians on everything you just mentioned in terms of your private life. Democrats don't want the government telling you what to do in the bedroom or who to marry or what church to worship at, or they don't want the government spying on you. But they do think the government has a role in helping you with things that are not in your private life but your public life, things like getting a job, getting health care, getting an education. They believe there is a role for government in that. And the Republicans are kind of the flip side. They want the government in your private life, telling you who to marry and what to do in the bedroom. They want the government spying on your phone calls, but they don't want the government to play a role in helping you with education or jobs or health care. It sounds to me like libertarians are taking, I guess the pure message, half Republican, half Democratic, government out of our private lives and out of our public lives. Do you accept that definition that I've just given you?
There's a general rule, but I mean, even on some of the more fiscally conservative issues, the way libertarians approach those issues are totally different than the way Republicans typically approach those issues. For instance, we're totally anti-corporate benefit. I mean, we may be labeled as fiscal conservatives, but in that element, we're actually the true conservatives. We don't think corporations, for instance, should get special rights and special benefits that small businesses and individuals on the street don't get. So there are some differences there. There's some minor differences with some Democrats where sometimes we're more likely to support a Democrat may be more likely to propose a smoking ban in a bar or something like bars in town, and we're usually going to be opposed to that. So there's some minor differences on both sides, but in general you're correct, but there's also a third piece of the pie, and that's foreign policy. And we're adamantly opposed to the war in Iraq. We've been opposed to it, and we think we should get out today.
You know, it's interesting. A lot of people would say at first blush that the Greens are sort of Democrats with an edge and libertarians are sort of Republicans with an edge. But as you describe your party's position, whether on Iraq or, spying on us or in the bedroom, so forth, they're pretty much run-of-the-mill Democratic Party positions, I guess.
They are right now. There's a reason for it. It's because this is the way the American public feels. A majority of Americans don't think we should be doing what we're doing in Iraq. A majority of Americans want increased fiscal responsibility from our elected leadership. And a majority of Americans want their private lives private.
Okay, so I want to press you. I want to find out how little government can you get here. So let's see how far the libertarians are willing to go. What, in your role...
Libertarians. Go ahead.
I'm sorry? Okay, what in your role is a legitimate function of the government? What is it justified, in your view, to tax the American citizens to do?
There's, again, even within the libertarian movement, a lot of controversy, but I'm going to speak for what I perceive as a majority of libertarians. Most people don't have too much of a problem with the post office, but they'd like to be able to see things like UPS, FedEx be more competitive. They'd like to have the playing field leveled.
I'm surprised they would even support the post office. And I would think a pure libertarian philosophy would be because groups can deliver the mail, the government should stay out of it.
There are some that feel that way, but at least with the post office, in theory, you're paying for what you get for the most part. It's a user fee type situation. I think you'd even get less libertarian resistance if the postal department the funding was just totally absolutely separate and in a separate account from the federal account. And there could be competition. Most libertarians will support vouchers, but most of them I know aren't actively pushing to get rid of public schools. They want competition and choice. They want homeschooling. And a lot of my Green Party friends are pushing more and more on homeschooling, too, because they're starting to feel the push of what government schools can do. All of a sudden...
But why not? I mean, one of the things I like about the libertarian philosophy is it's fairly simple to understand. It's fairly simple to apply. It's fairly black and white. As I understand it, you folks should be against public schools because that shouldn't be the proper role of government.
Most libertarians I know are opposed to public schools and would prefer not to send their kids there, but most of them I know at the same time are not pushing 100% to shut down every public school in the country because they realize that that isn't a realistic reality. It politically won't work today. But what we can do immediately is start getting more choice so parents and children have better options.
Okay, so y'all are being practical. I mean, you may have your ultimate philosophy of where the country ought to go, but you're willing to go in fits and starts to get there.
Yeah, incrementalism, I think, is the key, and I think this has been part of the problem with the third-party movement in the past, is they wanted all-or-nothing approaches, and all-or-nothing approaches typically aren't without some major real or pseudo-revolution. Those are hard to accomplish and hard to do.
But isn't that the beauty of a third party? I mean, y'all can be pure. Republicans and Democrats have to compromise between the center and with their own supporters, and they have to make these compromises. You know, if Joe Lieberman in the same party, well, actually, I guess he's not anymore. I should use a different example. But let's say Ben Nelson of Nebraska in the same party as, you know, Maxine Waters of California. They've got to make some compromises, both of them, to work together. But you folks, third party movements, you can be pure. You wouldn't seem you have to make those compromises.
Well, it depends on whether you want to be a protest party that wants to put out an educational message or you actually want to win elections. And I think we're on the verge of starting to win higher and higher level elections. We are the third largest party in the country. I'm sitting on the ground in Houston, Texas, on a congressional candidate in Tom DeLay's old district that has a shot of winning. And you were talking about Ron Paul just a minute ago. A third of this district is Ron Paul's old district, right where I'm sitting. They're not afraid of libertarianism. But right now the battle's between the liberal support seems to be drummed up, and we know where the numbers are there. But what we're looking at on the ground here in this particular race is how the conservative vote is going to be split up. And we're looking at a good shot at a potential libertarian win here in Tom DeLay's old seat.
What's the name of your candidate?
Bob Smither. As a matter of fact, I'm in a TV studio right now that we're doing a television commercial shoot right now.
Terrific. Now, here's the question that I would have. If I lived in your district and I wanted to vote for the Libertarian Party, because we do have a two-party system, who would Bob Smither vote for to be Speaker of the House? Nancy Pelosi or the successor to Denny Hastert?
That's a good question, and that was the tough issue that we had to look at in this particular race. And like with Ron Paul's district, in this particular race and district, in order to look at winning, we had to shoot towards the Republicans. He's committed to vote for a Republican, not necessarily Mr. Hastert, but a Republican.
I think Hastert's going to be gone in January, no matter who wins.
Exactly. I'm thinking the same thing. So in this case, a vote for Pelosi would have hurt the voter base. But then again, there's other places, such as we've got a real left-leaning Senate candidate who just came out of a really good Senate debate in Washington State. And I'm trying to remember his three key issues for his candidate. His name is Bruce Guthrie. But it's peace, prosperity, and something else that alliterated and started with a P. And he's running sort of more of a left-leaning libertarian campaign. And, I mean, just like the Republicans and Democrats, we have to look at our bases. We have to look at where we are. The voting block in Houston, Texas is a heck of a lot different than in Seattle, Washington. We can still apply the same general principles and philosophy and still cater to our voting base. That's important if we're going to actually win elections.
Very interesting. The toll-free number, folks, is 888-488-MARK or 877-4-HEAD-ON. Either way, you can call in and ask our guest whatever question you want. Challenge him, agree with him. It's all up to you. We'll be right back with more from the Communications Director for the National Libertarian Party right after this.
The United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights meet your most complex needs by providing productivity, competitiveness, reliability, accuracy, safety, leadership, and professionalism. Millwrights from the United Brotherhood of Carpenters are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competence and training. The UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business, anytime and every time. The Head On Radio Network is proud to be sponsored by these wonderful men and women who are building the American dream every day. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
A gallon of gas and a gallon of milk. That's what 1 hour of minimum wage work will buy. For nearly a decade, Virginia's minimum wage has remained pitifully low at $5.15 an hour.
When the plant closed, I took this job paying just a little more than the minimum wage. but I still can't support my family. Somebody should raise the bar.
America needs a raise. Help raise the minimum wage. Sign the petition at www.vafairwage.org. Sponsored by the Virginia AFL-CIO, working hard for all working people.
There's one place on the web you can go that's so topical, you can apply it liberally. WD40.com. WDYAD40.com. Wad Wally and Doofy are there. They're working hard every day to give you updates in news, politics, and a great sense of humor. So stop on by and see the boys at WD40.com, a place where you can raise your voice and be heard. WD40.com. Your one-stop shop for all things progressive.
In the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina, you can help people in need. Here are a few suggestions. Contact your local Red Cross. Donate blood. Call 1-800-HELP-NOW. You can also donate money. Go to redcross.org. And as well, you can contact your local church, synagogue, or mosque and find out what they're doing to help people affected by Hurricane Katrina. Thank you for your help and get involved.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. We are preparing, as all America should, for the great midterm elections that are coming up in just 9 days. Wait, 9 days? No, excuse me. 12 days. Okay, I'm ready for these elections. I want them already. All right, I guess it's about 12 days. But we've been talking, of course, mostly about Republicans and Democrats. But some places in America, voters have a third or a fourth choice, the Libertarian Party, the Green Party. We're going to focus on the Green Party tomorrow. Right now I'm talking with Stephen Gordon, the Communications Director for the National Libertarian Party. Stephen, you said before the break that you were the third largest party in America. Now, I don't know if that's true or not. I certainly am going to ask the Greens that tomorrow. They may say they're the third largest. Okay, I mean, how do you tell? What do you have, like card-carrying members? Are you larger than the Greens? I'm asking that question tomorrow, but make your pitch.
Well, we've just in our last national convention and in the year preceding that, we've just changed how we define membership. So there's going to be some discrepancy. We've been around for 31 years. We're organized in all 50 states. There's a few states where the organization isn't quite perfect, but at least we have representation. We're organized. We can. If you just look at ballot access is a key issue for third parties. If you look historically at, say, where the presidential candidates have gotten ballot access, and we typically get between 48 and 50 states every time, which is not even a close comparison to the other third party movements. Or if you look at the amount of candidates we're running about 600 candidates this election cycle, or the amount of people holding elected office. There is no one good way to measure it. Because unlike other parties, in many states, we can't just do it based on voter registration numbers because there is no voter registration for Constitution, Green, or Libertarian Party. So, but just based on the general dynamic, the amount of money that flows into it, the amount of media that comes out of it, by just those general terms, we're clearly the third largest party.
Well, one of the things that interests me is that, you know, whenever I go to vote in November, I'm amazed that not only are there not, you know, two people on the ballot. Everyone knows about Kerry and Bush in 2004. Most people knew about Nader or, Libertarian. But you see 12 parties or 14 parties, parties that, frankly, I never remember exist except every time I go to the general election. And yet the Libertarians, and I would say the Greens as well, I think the Reform Party is about dead, but these are the parties you hear about sort of as the next third or fourth. How does a third party work within a two-party system? I mean, in European countries, third parties are very common. They take over their coalitions. But we have a system under our Constitution, you know, like it or amend it, that really favors a two-party system. Don't you agree?
Yeah, well, it's more than just the Constitution. There's a lot of, the Constitution really didn't define us as a two-party system, but a lot of what's happened with entrenched political power has certainly made that more likely to occur. For instance, the likelihood of getting an incumbent out of Congress is virtually non-existent. I think it was in 2004, 99% of incumbents won, period. Doesn't matter. Mm. It's difficult to get somebody up because they're locked into the money machine, they're locked into the media machine, they're locked into the power machine, and all the other advantages of incumbency. That's part of it. And people have this perception that they want to go with the winner, and you always have to break that down. And that,
well, they also have the idea that third parties are spoilers. I mean, the classic case, of course, is 2000, where if just a very, very few of Ralph Nader's supporters had gone to Al Gore, and I think it's fair to say that the lion's share of Ralph Nader's supporter preferred Gore over Bush. They preferred, obviously, Nader first choice, but had they just voted their – if they voted their lesser of two evils, we would have had a different president in 2000.
Yeah, and that's the toughest issue to get over from the third party movement, if you can get enough people to do it. But we've got some, and the Green Party has this happen from time to time too. They'll get some unique races where there is only one other candidate in the race, or right now we're getting the advantage of a lot of the Republican scandals out there. For instance, as I said, I'm in Tom DeLay's old district right now. There is no Republican.
I want to get back to you on that, but let me go if I could. I've got a couple callers on the line. I want to give them a chance. Let's go to James from St. Louis. James, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Hi, James.
Hello, sir. I have now that I thought about it, I have two questions.
Okay.
Number one.
Go ahead.
Number one. What about corporate welfare? It seems to me that neither Republicans, Democrats, or any party really comes out and clearly addresses the tremendous amount of benefits that corporations have.
I can answer this one real fast.
Okay.
Libertarians, by the whole, are adamantly and enthusiastically opposed to any form of corporate welfare, period.
And, James, let me say, as a Democrat, I think the Democratic Party has been pretty strong against corporate welfare as well. I think this is something where we agree with libertarians.
They've been the lesser of two evils, I have to admit that. But, you know, they still vote for all these tax cuts that we've been seeing lately.
Well, now, tax cuts are where Democrats would differ from libertarians. Libertarians, I think, would support just about any tax cut for anyone, whereas Democrats think that... That's not true?
Not always. I mean, I've got a lot of candidates out there right now that are looking at deficit reduction as opposed to tax cuts. I mean, most people in America, including Democrats, including Republicans, and including libertarians, are upset about paying for a bridge to nowhere. And this sort of spending has to stop. So a lot of it just depends on the focus of the individual candidate. Yeah, in general, most libertarians generally favor tax cuts when that's a viable option. But we also have to pay down not just our debt, but our grandchildren's debt. We don't want to be saddling our grandchildren with this terrible economic deficit burden any more than Democrats do.
Wow. You know, it's Stephen Gordon, you sure you're from the Libertarians? Because you sure sound like you're from the Democrats to me. I don't know.
Yeah,
James, did you have a...
Democrats, starting with Howard Dean, started making a strong shift towards the Libertarian message. And Howard Dean...
Yeah, we are fiscal conservatives, indeed. James, did you have a second question?
Yeah, concerning the viability of third and even fourth parties on the ballot, what do you think about instant runoff voting?
I like
great
IRV.
Question.
I really love IRV. I would love to see a lot more of that throughout the country. And our national chair, Bill Redpath, does a lot of work on several different voting mechanisms with several voting groups. I work with a group in Alabama where we're trying to institute some election reform at the statewide level, including doing some stuff that would affect how the electoral votes are allocated. We're looking at proportional representation issue in Alabama and hope to get that legislation on the state agenda next February.
Frankly, I think instant runoff voting is clearly the most democratic way, democratic small d, to handle elections. It only makes sense to me. Then you can vote your heart, and if your candidate doesn't win in the top two, then indeed you can still have your voice being heard. So I also support instant runoff voting. Thank you very much for your call, James. Call back sometime. Let me go to Alice in California. Alice, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Hi, Alice.
Hi, Mark, and guests. The question I was wanting to ask was, do libertarians share the neocon hope for a country of extreme wealth and extreme poverty?
That's a great question, Alice. Let me pose it to Stephen. Stephen, one of the things the Republicans seem to support is, I guess, robbing the poor to give to the rich. All their tax cuts seem to apply to people who are going to inherit millions of dollars and people who have money in the bank, but don't seem to apply to the working class guy who's, you know, maybe he might get a $300, but he's not going to get very much. Does the Libertarian Party see a role in helping to make for a more equal ownership in this country?
Yeah, definitely. Matter of fact, a lot of people call us the small business party, and there's a reason for that, because we're looking at these guys as sort of the heartbeat of America. But whenever libertarians talk about a tax cut, I don't know of anyone that doesn't want some sort of across-the-board fair tax cut and to get rid of the special corporate benefits. That's where a lot of these rich people get their breaks. But definitely, whatever happens with taxation, it should be fair to everybody. And
well, let's talk about fair, because fair means a lot of things to different people. I mean, I support a graduated income tax. I have no problem saying that if you earn $1 million, you need to pay, you know, 39%, but if you make $10,000, you only need to pay 5%. I have no problem with a graduated income tax. Some people would argue the only fair tax is a flat tax. What's your view?
There's a lot of debate even within our party. A lot of people like flat taxes. A lot of people like value-added taxes. The key thing I'd like to do personally, this is my personal opinion, and obviously the party's got varying views. Members of the party and different candidates have differing views on this. Personally, what I'd like to do is start getting rid of loopholes, decreasing the overall tax burden a little bit as we get rid of those loopholes, so that the rich aren't getting advantage of all the loopholes they're getting right now. That's the way I'd like to see it go. But everybody's got their own view. But I think we're all looking at the same general end goal.
Well, you know, Stephen, I mean, I agree with you on the loopholes, but to me, the flat tax and first graduated tax is, I guess, an important philosophical question, because, and you may be close to the Republicans on this, I don't know, but the Republicans say basically every $100 you earn, pay, you know, 25%. Whereas Democrats are saying, you know what, if you've got $10,000 a year and you're struggling to feed your family, you can't afford to pay 25%, whereas if you're making, you know, $100 million a year, you don't even notice the difference. So Democrats believe the tax system can be used to redistribute wealth. How do libertarians think?
Well, a lot of libertarians right now are pushing for a value-added tax with deductions for things like food, health care, or clothing. And there's a little debate over which things should be excluded or how much, but that's sort of trying to get back into that same pattern. So more of the luxury items are being taxed, but not the necessities. So this would, in a sense, be a graduated tax. People could afford their medicine, they could afford their food, and not be taxed on that. And that may also have a positive effect. And that's one argument that I'm hearing a lot from the libertarian movement. And I haven't personally made my decision. There's a lot of pros and cons for every plan I've seen out there, and I haven't made a personal decision on that. I know generally I would like to see the government quit wasting my money and for people to be taxed on a more fair basis.
Well, on that we can all agree, but I always felt that the devil was in the details. Alice, thank you for your call, folks. If you want to join in this discussion, you know how to do it. Just pick up the phone, dial 888-488-MARK. Or 877-4-HEAD-ON. If you need the numbers rather than the letters, it's 888-488-6275. We'll be right back with the communications director for the National Libertarian Party right after this.
Harry Potter has given us all a unique glimpse at education the way it ought to be. Never once do Harry and his Hogwarts friends talk about skipping class, ducking tough instructors, waiving requirements, or shirking responsibilities. That perspective, be practical, get it the easiest, fastest, cheapest way you can, is what J.K. Rowling terms the Muggle approach to education. We're Concord University, and do we have a deal for you? At Concord, education's different than anywhere else around. There's a reason that Concord students get the best jobs, are sought out by the best medical, graduate, and law schools in the land. It's no wonder that Concord has been cited by U.S. News & World Report and by the Wall Street Journal. Where do I sign up? At Southern West Virginia's version of Track 9 and 3 Quarters. All you have to do is believe, and believe in yourself. Concord University, an education you can put to work. 1-888-384-5249.
Head on Radio with Bob Kincaid.
When? Somebody tell me when the United States of America went from a can-do country to a can't-do country. Was can-do washed away in the fetid floods of Katrina? Was can-do killed in the stinking sands of Iraq? Did can-do get buried in the dank and gassy hole of Sago number 1? Where did the Bush administration go when they took can-do out and killed it? What happened to a nation that never said we can't? What happened to that nation that knew that the only thing it had to fear was fear itself?
Well, Mr. Kincaid, we've replaced that slogan. Now all we have is fear.
Head On with Bob Kincaid, 7 to 10 p.m. weeknights on the Head On Radio Network. Do you
know what you want? Hi. My name is Aaron, and I'm a survivor of mannequinism. Mannequinism is basically when you turn into a hard plastic shell. This is from not being politically active. For me, it started when I didn't register to vote, and then I stopped volunteering, and before I knew it, I wasn't doing anything. And that's when I found the first sign. A small, discolored hard patch of plastic on my right shoulder. I thought it would go away on its own, but it didn't. Kept spreading, and when I could no longer conceal it with a t-shirt, I knew I had to see the doctor. He said I had this early stage of mannequinism and that my only hope was to get involved, even if it was something simple. So I began reading the newspaper and instantly got feeling back in my arm. I guess you could say I'm living proof you can fight mannequinism.
Protect yourself from mannequinism. Log on to fightmannequinism.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. Normally we focus on Republicans and Democrats, but today we're talking about a third choice. What about the Libertarian Party? My guest is Stephen Gordon, Communications Director for the National Libertarian Party. And I think what I've been most surprised so far in this interview is, I guess, the big tent of the Libertarian Party. I had seen it as a very clear, no government in any circumstance except maybe national defense, sort of a purist view. And what I'm learning is that there's range in the Libertarian Party, just like there is in the Republican and the Democratic parties. Is that fair, Stephen?
Yeah, that's a very fair statement.
Let me ask you this. I'm going to just give you issue by issue. Yesterday, the New Jersey Supreme Court came down and said that gay people should have the right to marry just like straight people, maybe call a different name, maybe not. What's Libertarians' view on that?
Gay people should have the same right to be married as everybody else. Sometimes there's some libertarian distinction over whether the government should be authorizing that license. And we wouldn't even be having this battle. Here's the pure libertarian side of it. Yes, we agree gay people should be able to do whatever they want. The question is whether government should be involved in the picture. Unfortunately, they are, so I'd definitely say that gay people should have the same marital rights as straight people. No question.
Okay, another issue where I think I know your view already. The government has just banned internet gambling. They think that they have that people shouldn't be gambling. And so there's a new bill out there. I have to admit, I used to play poker online. I don't do it anymore because I don't want to break the law. I assume the Libertarians would be strongly against the government trying to regulate gambling.
Yeah, I wrote our first press release on the topic. Yes, we're adamantly opposed to that bill. And the way they stuck it in is even worse. But I'm not a gambler. I could care less. I'd probably spend $20 a year on gambling, on some football game with a friend or something. But I don't care about the issue, but it's an important rights issue. And who are the Republicans to tell us we can or can't gamble online?
Okay, let's move on to the nation's drug laws. Now, here it's a bit difficult for me. I have a basically libertarian perspective in it. I really hate to tell people, what to do with their own bodies. On the other hand, some of these drugs, maybe not marijuana, but some of these drugs, crack and others, can be really dangerous. What's the libertarian position on the nation's drug laws?
The general libertarian position is more on the decriminalization side. The issue I've been involved in and heavily involved in for a long time is medical marijuana. That's where I put my time and issue. Because we have sick people, we have people with cancer and AIDS that are suffering, that other medications aren't working. Or if they can get the medication, they can't afford the medication. And it's real simple. Medical marijuana works for millions of people around the country. And even in San Diego today, they're having a big battle over medical marijuana, despite the fact that it's not super.
Stephen, I was going to say, I agree with you. I'll even raise you one. I actually think that marijuana should be legalized. But I think the issue. Go ahead.
I said they're working on it real hard in Colorado right now. They've done it in Denver. And there have been a lot of libertarians behind those efforts.
And for the record, just like you don't gamble, I don't smoke pot. But
yeah,
one of my listeners.
Either. I have actually inhaled, but I that's not my drug of choice. I like bourbon, and that's my drug of choice. But
I like bourbon too. Hey, you know, we have a lot in common here. I'm from Tennessee. I'm a big fan of Jack Daniels. I was just telling my producer that before the show.
Yeah,
but I got to tell you.
Alabama.
One of my listeners writes in on the blog, are libertarians just Republicans that smoke pot? I mean, the perception of libertarians is that, you know, you might agree on some drug laws or, maybe gay rights, but otherwise you're really just Republicans. And maybe that's because the candidates you're supporting, people like Ron Paul, tend to vote for the Republican Party.
Okay, Ron Paul does vote on some economic issues, but Ron Paul's been on House issues because he is a Republican. But for the most part, take a look at his issues. And again, I think we need to get back to this third triad. Everybody looks at economic and fiscal issues, but I think that foreign policy is just an important issue in national politics. And Ron Paul has consistently voted against every measure that has to do with the war in Iraq. He's voted against the Patriot Act. He votes against every time they try to usurp our individual rights and freedoms and liberties. And this is the way pretty much any libertarian would vote if elected and in Congress.
Okay, let me get back to the drugs. So you and I agree that marijuana should be legalized, but how far? But see, I don't know that I would go much farther. What about drugs? I don't think marijuana is a big danger, but I think that crack or LSD, I mean, arsenic is a poison. I mean, is there a role for government in regulating drugs, according to the Libertarian Party?
I've got two children in college. The last thing in the world I want them doing is crack or methamphetamine or acid or any of these other drugs that are out there. The Libertarian Party generally wants government deregulation, wants to get them out. But as a political, real-world approach, what we need to look at, let's start with medical marijuana. If we can get to medical marijuana, maybe we can do something in a few more locations about marijuana in general, because that seems to be something that doesn't hurt too many people. Let's focus on what we can do. There's only 12 states that have any sort of medical marijuana legislation. We can push that in the other states. And that's the start. That's the starting point. It's more important to me to stop people suffering than it is to heighten their pleasures. And I'd much prefer to focus on the health care aspects at this moment.
Now, but see, that was a very political answer. I mean, you obviously talked about things that are possible. But you didn't really answer my question about how far you would take it. I mean, isn't the role of the Libertarian Party, in essence, to take all government out of drug regulation?
There's the anarchist edge of the party that thinks that there should be no government at one end. There's one end that's pretty much free market Democrats. There's one end that's pretty much mad, angry Republicans. So, I mean, we are a big tent. I've got to speak for a lot of people. I apologize for being political, but I'm not just speaking
for myself. No, that's fair. You can say there's a difference in your party. That's fair.
And there is a split, and there's plenty of people in the party. So I can tell you what I'm doing in practice in my personal life, and that's working in that one particular issue. And I've been working very hard on that issue. We've introduced the legislation, and we may win it in Alabama next year.
Okay, now we've been focusing largely on government in your private life, whether it be drugs or who you can marry or, taking the government out of Iraq. These are issues that or not having government spy on you. These are issues where largely the Libertarian Party maps the Democratic Party. Let me switch sides and talk about where the Libertarian Party might map the Republican Party and be different. National health care. One of the things a lot of Democrats believe is that the best way and the cheapest way to get health care to individuals is to get rid of the middleman, the insurance companies who are taking so much money, and the drug companies, and allow the government to do what they do in Canada, they do in France, and some other countries, have a national health care program that provides for everyone. That's an issue where I guess you would disagree with the Democrats.
Yes and no. Let me throw two things at you real fast. First of all, there are a couple, not very many. The overwhelming majority of libertarians would clearly be opposed to anything such as a national health care plan. But there are a couple of candidates who are running on it right now, to be fair to them. Second of all, I personally look at this, that there's three different ways that people can get health care. It's not this left-right dichotomy between national health care or what I'm going to call corporate health care. That's the way I perceive the Republican health care plan. It's insurance companies, it's big pharmaceutical companies, and a good chunk of government in a system that isn't working any better or worse than I think a socialized government single-payer health care system would. I personally prefer a free market health care where people and their doctors and their health care providers can actually communicate and talk with each other, cut out most of the of the program, cut out the corporate benefits, and get back to the day when a man or a woman can talk to their own doctor and make their own health care choices. And I don't think that's going to happen well with either system, the Republican system or the Democratic system. And I think most libertarians would promote something that's more of a free market health care system. There's an awful lot of anti-pharmaceutical company and anti-insurance company libertarians out there, believe me.
Well, let me pose a problem, if I can, with the free market for health care. You know, Thomas Jefferson says all men are created equal, and we certainly want people to be equal under the law, but we're not equal in terms of health care or health problems. Some of us are genetically born with the need for a lot of health care. Some of us are lucky enough not to need that. And, of course, we aren't equal in terms of wealth either. You know, in a free market system, it sounds to me like if you're rich or you're healthy, you do a lot better than if you're poor or you're sick. And is that fair?
Yes, that is a fair statement to some degree. At least you're going to start off easier. But there's some other pieces that can fit into this. First of all, we don't have a free market health care system now. Whatever the Republicans choose to call it, it's not a free market health care system. And I think that any American, except for a few diehard Republicans, would agree. So we can't compare what we have now to the way things would operate under a truly free market system. The spirit of volunteerism has always been alive and well in America. I can't speak for Charles Dickens and England during the Industrial Revolution. But in America, especially when we had lower tax rates, people would spend a lot of time when somebody in their community was sick, their church, their neighborhood, their local organizations pitch in the money. I know that I had to buy gas this morning, and they had a thing to help some blind kid over at the gas station. I threw a dollar bill in. It still happens, but it doesn't happen to the scale it could or would if we had a truly free market system, and people were spending a lot less of their money on health care.
But the problem is, I think, is we can't rely on it. Listen, I'm all for charity. I'm all for the things that the churches do. But if you look at it, you know, in a macro level, and I am an economist, and I do look at these statistics, what charities are giving just isn't enough. We have greater difference between, you know, the top 1% and the bottom 1% over the last 6 years than any time before in American history. The rich are getting richer, the poor are getting poorer, and a lot of people don't get adequate health care. I mean, so is there any role for the Libertarian Party in helping those that are struggling to get by?
Yeah, this is where we're probably going to disagree in it. Getting the government out of it and getting the government out of getting the Democrats and the Republicans out of it so that there's a true free exchange system as opposed to the system that the majority of the money goes straight to the government to be doled out to doctors to pay for patient care, or the Republican system which a lot of that money goes through the government and gets funneled into big programs that don't work and insurance companies and pharmaceutical companies.
Okay, we're going to take another break, folks. It's 888-488-MARK. Ask your own questions. Agree with me, agree with Stephen, disagree with both of us. That's your right. 888-488-6275. When we come back, I'm going to ask him about immigration, inherited wealth, and labor unions. Right after this.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Bruce Birch radio program. Weekdays, 5 to 7 p.m. Connecting people.
Listen, not only we have the founding fathers and mothers, now we got the founding sisters. Don't forget about that, girl. It's Wicked Witch of the North, huh, Peter?
Jim, I'm the Wicked Witch of the South. Glad to meet you, buddy.
Well, listen, I sent an email. You haven't replied.
Dude, I replied to your email. I told you that we wanted to have you in chat.
I can't do it. They won't let me in.
Oh, please.
Is this a good idea?
You're a real, both of you are a total camp.
Bruce, I love you more.
Uh-oh.
Oh, my God. I'm going to have to retreat to my Barbara Cartland novels and my box of bonbons.
Oh, God, the world's first bitch fight on internet radio.
This is great. This is great. So, do I have to flip a coin, or what's the deal here?
Don't miss Bruce Birch, weekdays, 5 to 7 p.m. on the Head On Radio Network.
A routine visit to the pediatrician costs more than a minimum wage worker earns in one full day. For nearly a decade, Virginia's minimum wage has remained pitifully low at $5.15 an hour.
I'm a single mom and I have to work two jobs just to pay the rent and put food on the table. It's really hard.
America needs a raise. Help raise the minimum wage. Sign the petition at www.vafairwage.org. Sponsored by the Virginia AFL-CIO, working hard for all working people.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. When you consider who you're going to vote for this November, most people are considering Republican or Democrat. Some folks may want to try a third option, maybe a fourth, Libertarian Party, the Green Party. What is the role of these parties in America? Do they ever have a chance? And what are their philosophies? I mean, are you a libertarian? I hear lots of people call themselves libertarians, but then when you push them, well, they do believe there is a proper role for government. But I have right here the National Libertarian Party Communications Director, Stephen Gordon, on the line. Stephen, thanks for coming here on the Inside Scoop. Let me ask you some of these questions
Can I ask something first?
Yeah, go right ahead.
You said that whether there's a role for government. If you'll take a look at the Libertarian Party website at lp.org, it says small government. It doesn't say no government. No government is there are anarchists within the libertarian movement, but that's not the party position on anything. So.
Okay, fair enough.
Government and reasonable and responsible government.
Let me ask you about a few things. One is the question of inherited wealth. The problem, I think, with the free market system is that if we all had equal opportunity under the law, if we all started in an equal place, I'd be the first to say, you know, rise or fall as your merits let you. You know, if you do well and you succeed, terrific. And if you do badly and you go to jail, that's your own fault. But we don't start at an equal place in the race. If you're born to a very poor family, maybe you have a single parent, maybe you got a parent in jail, you just don't have the same education, the same health care, the same chance to succeed at life than you do if you're born, say, the son of a president of the United States. What do you see, if at all, is the role of the Libertarian Party in helping to equalize opportunity among Americans?
Well, first of all, we're strong believers in the 14th Amendment and the due process and equal opportunity clauses. However, we're going to disagree with Democrats on some issues. Certainly with respect to most legal issues, we're in agreement there. Like on race or gender or sexual preference, we're going to be in agreement on those sorts of issues. But with respect to everybody isn't born with a silver spoon in their mouth, but the opportunities should be the same. This is where we may disagree. That doesn't mean that we should take taxpayer money and give it to one group and take it from another group to redistribute the wealth. That's where we're going to disagree. No redistribution of wealth. But in general, we all agree that everybody should have the same exact opportunities.
Well, how is everyone going to have the same opportunities if one kid's getting good education and health care and food and shelter and another kid is having trouble, you know, eating or with medical care or even learning how to read in some of our schools?
I'm sorry. I got interrupted for just a moment. Would you restate that again?
No problem. I was going to say I support equal opportunity, so do you, but how can we have equal opportunity with such unequal wealth? I mean, some kids in America have trouble finding food on the table or having even a decent enough education to know how to read. How are you going to give them an equal opportunity without throwing a little bit of money their way?
Well, perhaps one of the things we could start off with, which would make a big difference, is getting rid of some of these corporate advantages that people have, getting rid of some of the cronyism that we have in politics and the corporate advantages that we have in the money world. It's not going to happen overnight without some sort of bloody revolution. And I think that some of the more leftist causes historically have proven not to work very well. And we can do this if we get back to this basic level of community and people, the way America was founded, the way we were when we were founded. When our country was founded, yeah, there was some benefit that wealthy people had, but people had a lot more equal opportunity to make their own way. And we need to get back to that sort of system.
Certain people did. Certain white male Christians with property
Had
equal opportunity. Okay, let me ask you this.
I'm in agreement with you there, and as I stated before, definitely we agree with you on racial issues and those sorts of issues. I certainly agree. But I'm talking about the general population, not counting those specific targeted segregated groups, definitely.
Tell me this.
Women should have the same opportunity as men.
Absolutely. Let me ask you this. One of the things I firmly believe in, and not just because labor supports this show, is that workers should have the opportunity to band together in unions and try to get collective bargaining, get better wages, better conditions. What's libertarians' view on labor unions?
Most libertarians definitely support the right of anybody to associate with each other however they voluntarily choose. So labor unions aren't a problem. They also think that government shouldn't force companies to by force have to do business with the union. So there's going to be a little difference from the Republicans and the Democrats there. Yeah, we strongly support the rights of unions. I know a lot of union member libertarians. By the same token, we support the right of a business not contract with that union.
Well, you say the business not to contract with that union. What if the workers of that business get together and unionize? Do you think that the business can fire them for doing that?
As a business owner, I certainly wouldn't do that, and I've owned small businesses, and I've dealt with unions and non-union places. I prefer, and I won't deal with the union. The union can vote on whatever they want. They can walk out or not. I've always tried to provide a fair and reasonable wage, and I think you get what you pay for. And I don't mind doing that, but I also know, and here's one of the problems I have from a business owner's point of view in negotiating with the union, I may have somebody that's a really good employee that I want to give maximum wages or a financial incentive to do better because I think they have a lot of potential, and that's a lot more difficult. And there's somebody I may just need to fire because he just doesn't do the job. He either can't do the job or doesn't show up and work on time. I've got a bottom line to protect, and I think I need to have the right to determine who works for me and who doesn't.
Well, no, I agree with you. I have no problem with rewarding quality workers and even firing workers that don't have a quality. But I do think it's very important that workers have the right to join together, particularly in – I think it matters more in a large company than a small one. But particularly where there's this inequality there, and they can work to help everyone's wages, everyone to get health care benefits. Rather than distinguishing between the good workers and the bad workers, which I think every business has a right to do. Is that fair?
Yeah, and definitely people have the right to organize and form a union. There's no doubt, no question about that.
Okay, we only got a few minutes left. I know I keep interrupting you. I'm trying to cover a lot of different things in this hour. Immigration, big fight over legal immigration, Democrats, Republicans, all over the map. What's libertarian view?
This is weird. Libertarians have always been known as the open party, open border party, and they're all over the map, too. I think I've seen some of the better arguments coming from Democrats, from some of the from some Democrats and some Libertarians, I'm not seeing too much reasonable coming from Republicans right now. It is an issue that we have to face this election cycle and certainly going into the 2008 election cycle. And you're right, everybody's all over the map. A lot of it, I think, depends on how your one's individual community is affected. And border towns, for instance, are a lot different than some rural towns in the north that don't have much of a migrant labor force. So a lot of I don't think there's a great answer in this, but I can tell you what I don't think is the answer. I don't think building a 3,000-mile cement wall with machine guns placed every 20 feet is going to solve the problem.
Okay, last question, and we only got a minute left. This is from one of my listeners. One of my listeners says, Libertarians are the selfish party. They only care about themselves. No social safety net for anyone else. Pretty harsh. How do you respond?
Well, there's a total difference between being selfish and not having the political social safety net. I personally don't know. Some of the people who are most likely to give you the shirt off their back that I know are Libertarians. They're not selfish. I know somebody who's actually run himself bankrupt helping his neighbors. So that's not selfish. It's just a matter of whether we want the government to control that or whether we want individuals to control that. We're a party of individuals. We're a party of individual people. And most Libertarians I know aren't selfish. But you know what? There's a couple of Republicans and Democrats that are selfish, and there's a couple of Libertarians that are selfish. So none of us are perfect. But in general, we're pretty giving.
Stephen Gordon. 15 seconds. Is anyone going to win a national race from the Libertarian Party this year? And if so, who?
We're looking at higher 6-8% higher vote numbers in a lot of districts. I'm looking at a state house race in Indiana that looks pretty hot. I'm looking at a congressional race in Texas that looks pretty hot. That would be Tom DeLay's district in Texas where I'm at. We've got several state house races. Some of the races in Arizona are interesting.
I'm afraid I have to close.
All right. Good day.
Okay. No, thank you very much. I'm sorry to keep interrupting you. There was so much I wanted to cover, but thank you very much for giving us Libertarian perspective and for coming here on the Inside Scoop. That's it for the Inside Scoop. Tomorrow we're going after another party in America. It's called the Green Party. We've got Bob Fitrakis, the candidate for governor of Ohio. You won't want to miss that. For now, it's Mark Levine signing off.
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Oh, yes. Hello, everybody. How are you today? Welcome to the Guy James Show. I'm Guy James. I'm doggone glad to be with you this afternoon here in the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network. Ah, yes. We hope to have a good show for you today. A little later on coming up, we're going to have Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. We're going to talk about a little black box voting situation that we've got all over the country right now. Very important time coming up with this midterm election. We're also going to be joined by Clint Curtis, candidate for Congress here in Florida, and also a whistleblower of the black box voting issue, who's a very interesting man. And by golly, believe it or not, he's just about pulled even with Tom Feeney, that bastard Tom Feeney here in Southeast Florida, actually, and might have a good chance of beating him, especially if you guys all send him a few extra bucks so he can run a few more ads. But it's pulling in. It's pulling close. And so we'll have both of them with us a little later on. I think at the bottom of this hour, we're going to have Brad on. And then Clint's going to join us, I think, at about 4:05. That's the way we have it planned anyway. Everybody all tip-top shape and all caught up on the news and everything today? Are you? You know, my listeners, you guys, you must read papers, you must watch the cable news, you must do it all, because my listeners are so well informed, unbelievably well informed. You know, it's fascinating, when I talk to other people about issues that we discuss here on this program, the ignorance that there is out in the general public, and it bothers me a little bit. It really does bother me that so many people just don't give a damn. Oh, well, all politics is corrupt anyway. Well, my vote doesn't make any difference. You know, I would think of all places in this country, Floridians would say, yeah, my vote makes a difference. All I got to do is think back to the Al Gore thing. You know, I've often said if our program would have been on in 2000, we could have swayed the hearts and minds of, what was it, 358 people or however many it was. We might have been able to win that election. Maybe it's inevitable that we could not have, because the Supreme Court was going to decide one way or another, and Catherine Harris, maybe they had it rigged so bad that nothing could have been done. But anyway, I like to think that. And that's why I think it's important to have true liberal voices on the Internet and on terrestrial radio and on TV. And we don't have very much of that. And so I do hope you'll support all of your liberal broadcasters and even the ones that call themselves progressive. I'm the stubborn one. I'm a liberal. By God, I was born a liberal. I've stayed a liberal. You know that old saying, who was it, Winston Churchill, that said, if you're young and you're not a liberal, you have no heart. And if you're older and are not a conservative, you have no brain. To hell with that. The older I get, the more liberal I get. So I either Winston was dead wrong or I am. And, I didn't know Winston. I know myself. I think I'm right and he was dead wrong. In fact, I see no reason why the older you get, the more liberal you shouldn't get. Do you understand why you shouldn't? The more you understand the ills of society, the societal problems there are in this country, don't you think you should become more liberal over the years? The better understanding that you have, the more informed, the more the wiser you get, the more you understand the problems of the people and the problems of the world, I would think you'd get a little more liberal. That seems to be a natural progression to me. Anyway, I know somebody who doesn't